3.
Recording in progress.
What's today's date? I don't even know.
29th.
Budget hearing for the Finance Committee. Or continue the budget hearing from last night. Citizens' comments isn't on here, on the agenda, but if there is anybody, and I don't see anybody I don't sort of recognize.
He recognizes you.
So, let it note that there were no citizens here. Would you like to open with something?
Let's go right to the PD.
Okay, Police Department. Take a seat.
Apologies.
Hey.
It's been a day.
Hey, no. Welcome to your safe zone.
Yes.
Welcome to family and friends.
Seriously, right?
You're in a nice, calm, relaxing place to be, Natalie. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Hope we can cheer up your day.
If you could just give us an overview of what we're looking at this year. I know it's pretty much last year with necessary increases, but if you could give us a rundown, what you do, who you need to do it, what you would like, etc.
TJ Lynch, your police chief. This year's budget is basically last year's budget with a 2.5% COLA and a few minor adjustments due to increases due to inflation, software, prices go up, things like that. No new programs or initiatives, no additional personnel. Just like in fiscal year 25, we had 58 sworn personnel. We have 58 sworn personnel this year as well. So you might see me introduce a new officer on the 7th of May, but that doesn't mean we're adding another officer to the department. We're just filling. We had 5 vacancies. We filled 4. We still have one that I won't fill until after we see what happens with June 3rd vote. And then, like I said, other than that, our increase was 2.9% from last fiscal year to this fiscal year.
Anybody have any questions?
I just feel it's amazing, quite honestly, when you consider the cost of anything today, that's like operating in a net zero or less. You'd be commended on that.
It just happened to work out. I mean, one of the, we had a couple of items that were pretty, we had a lieutenant that retired, so we had a budget for his bio for his earned time. We do not have that happen this year, so we were able to reduce that line item considerably. I'd love to be saying that I'm getting 2 additional officers going to 60, and what we could do with them and all that, but just financially, it's not in the cards. So the charge was level service, and that's basically what we gave.
What was your authorization in 2009 or 2001? Wasn't it 58 or thereabouts, and you never got there until now?
In the year 2000, we were budgeted for 54. 54. In the year 2000, we were budgeted for 54. We only got to 50 sworn officers. The economy started to decline considerably. We never reached 54, and we didn't stay at 50. We dropped all the way to 38. And then climbed back to 46 by 2016. And since 2016, we've slowly been able to put 12 additional officers on, bringing us to 58. We're still well behind where we should be for a community of this size. I mean, a town like Norwood has 65 police officers for 26,000 residents. We have 58 for 34,000?
Yep.
And 28 square miles, and they have about
right.
10.
Correct. They are 10 square miles.
Amazing. Unbelievable.
I'm going to tell, I complimented the chief on something that many of you know. I'm a scanner junkie. And in the middle of this last winter, on one of those nights where it was going to be 10 below or whatever, they got a call. I'm going to guess it was 2:30 in the morning. I listened a lot. For a guy sleeping on a bench down at the train station by Gorelix. They were dispatched, went down, couldn't find him. 10 minutes later, another call, follow-up call. They found him this time. In about 20 minutes, the MEC called them because there's some time clock that starts on a call. If they don't hear from somebody, they make sure they're all right. The MEC called, and they said that the officer on the scene, I think it was two patrolmen and maybe a sergeant floating around. He said, "We're working on something. We'll let you know." And within another 10 minutes, one of the officers said, "We've got a solution. We're transporting him there now." And that was the end of it. So, I mean, that's important. We can't lose that kind of stuff. And you lose, I'm sure the guys that are working that shift, other than the sergeant, had badge numbers in the 80s. They're new guys, young guys, and that's how they think, and the quality of the people. Just hit me that night.
It's hitting me now.
They took him to a hotel, and they paid for it out of their own pocket.
Amazing. All right.
Can I ask one little question? Is there anything in the budget that you are taking a guess at that has you nervous, that maybe there's a contract that hasn't renewed yet or anything? Like, I'm thinking of last night with the school buses. They had to, you know, put up to bid the school bus contract, and they got it back. But is there anything in your budget that, you know, you're nervous about it coming back higher than you maybe forecasted for?
No, I mean, they're in the middle of nothing when it comes to any of the services we use or anything like that. No, nothing like that. In the collective bargaining, we had a meeting actually today with the patrol officers. We've been meeting with the sergeant's union as well. They're cognizant of the situation, mm-hmm. you know, that the town is under. No, I think that whatever, between what the town will be able to give and what we might be able to utilize within the budget, you know, not that there's a lot of fat in there
right,
at all,
right.
That would be able to handle it.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be something that would throw us way off
okay.
or put us in a bind.
Okay.
If we don't get the override and we lose $250,000, that's a completely
different
story. Mm-hmm. $250,000 reduction, we're looking at laying off two police officers.
Okay. Thank you.
Question? I know there's some things that run through the capital budget versus running through the operating budget. Can you just remind me of some of those things?
So the things, typically it's almost it's the same every year. We buy our motor vehicles, so the cruisers, typically it's about five motor vehicles, four marked, one unmarked is typically the way it goes. We have 31 vehicles in the fleet. Other with capital would be the replacement for the bulletproof vest or the soft body armor that the officers wear. Again, you give us the money, and then half of it comes back in a reimbursement from the federal government, the other half comes back in a reimbursement from the state, if they're both fully funded. The next thing that we typically would buy out of that is technology, you know, desktops, any laptops, tablets that the officers use, we would replace those. The fourth usually is, it's our less lethal taser system. We usually do what's called a TAP program, it's a 5-year lease. And so we spread out the payments over 5 years, and usually you get, you know, some free equipment as well as cartridges and things like that. So it actually is more advantageous for us to spread it out. It's more advantageous to spread it over the 5 years for a number of reasons, including the fact of the cost. There was a significant increase this year from the X2, which they're eliminating, to the X10 or the Taser 10. They're not cheap,
okay.
But they're worth their weight.
Yeah.
In gold, from lack of us being injured, suspects being injured, etc.
Yeah,
they diffuse a lot of situations before anything has to happen.
Thank you. Yeah, the reason I asked the question too is because I knew there were some just critical things that happened that, like, are just not in there too. So you rely on the capital budget. I think it's just good for people to know is that you don't have a lot of things. In fact, you actually need the capital budget to get some of the things that you do need.
Yeah, I would say that all of those things are regular occurring expenses. We buy cruisers every year. We buy bulletproof vests every year. We have it's a lease program for the tasers, technology, etc. It's just the problem is you can't take that $400,000 and stick it into the operating budget. It's not doable right now. We can't do it. Anything else that comes up during the year, and there are a lot of expenses, unforeseen or foreseen, that come up that can't be recurring, that we will sometimes end up buying through some of the programs that we have. We have a task force officer that's attached with Homeland Security Investigations, primarily doing narcotics work. And any investigation he's involved in that ends up in a conviction and any of the assets that are taken, cash, cars, boats, et cetera, we get a portion of that. That's what bought the UTV. That's what bought Ben. That's what bought Frankie. These are all things that are not in our budget that we can't buy. And we don't come to capital for it because what we're asking for is pretty significant as well. We're also cognizant there's only so much capital that we share with all these people and others as well. So we end up using that fund. But that fund cannot be used for recurring things. It can only be used for law enforcement related equipment, training, and overtime for investigations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Oops, Steve's up.
Thank you. Thank you. Steve Sherlock, 13 Magnolia Drive, Community Information Bureau, Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio. Through you to the chief. Could you expand on, I think you said five are being replaced in terms of the hiring. One of the things I hear periodically in the neighborhood is that, well, the row is hiring. Why are we having a budget issue if row is hiring? But effectively, restate that you're replacing people. These are not net new. And perhaps elaborate on, I think it's either retirements or some transfers.
Sure.
Thank you.
Lieutenant John Ryan retired after 32 years. Patrolman Jimmy Lawrence retired after almost 40 years. Nicholas Palmieri left as a sergeant to become the chief of police in the town of Upton. Good for him. We lost Michael Gilboy, who, after 23 years working for the town of Franklin, who didn't want to go, but it was time for him to take one for the team, being the family. His wife got a very nice job down in Falmouth, and he and she did not want to have her driving back and forth over the bridge, so he transferred to the Falmouth PD. And Marciano Silver followed his parents, who are a bit older, to take care of them and work down in the state of Florida. So he transferred to a Florida law enforcement department. Since then, we have hired, like I said, you've met three of the four. You'll meet the fourth on May 7th. So they're just replacements. People do retire. Things come up, quality of life-related issues. Very rare that you're going to see a Franklin officer leave Franklin to go to another Massachusetts local department. Like I said, you know, Michael was our canine officer for the last 23 years. I don't think he really wanted to go, but it was just a family-related thing, and he decided that he was going to, you know, do that. Marciano speaks for himself. He's going down to help out his parents, who moved down to Florida. And the retirement's good for them. I'm soon behind them.
Anybody else?
Good.
Thank you.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Speaking of big equipment, the fire department, you're next. By the way, I was invited to go to live fire training. Was it last Tuesday or Wednesday with these guys? Like, I did not go in the building. I understand you did.
I didn't want to come out.
To rescue him, but that was all right.
It was awesome. In another life, I could have been a firefighter. It was great.
It was nice to see that, and it's grant money, so we don't see as we're at a budget hearing. It was all grant money used properly.
And it was actually repurposed. It was some training money we had from a grant from last year. We were able to keep the cost down in that training, so there was some extra money, and then FEMA let us use it for this.
But it was nice to see the training going on.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, especially with the loss of the Milford Burn Building.
Yeah, they used to train in Milford, and the Milford Building has been burned out, I guess. Tell us about your budget.
Much like the PD, we're looking at a budget that's not much different from last year. We do have the same increase, that 2.5% COLA. There's some just additional extra money in some of the line items. That just accounts for like ambulance callbacks, some of the overtime. What we're finding is some of the calls are happening, if they're happening right before shift change, we basically have to have that person get paid that extra time by the time they get back from the hospital. So some of those costs have been increasing because the run volume has been going up. just by chance, time-wise, the timing, those calls are occurring, you know, more so with the shift change. The expenses have gone up about 3.7%, which I'm going to say truthfully isn't an accurate number. Our actual expenses are going up 1.7% as it relates to stuff we do, equipment we need, services we need. The extra percentage is actually due to the ambulance billing. We do pay ComStar to do our ambulance billing. The good news is because we're doing more runs, we're bringing more money in, we owe them more money. So that line item's in our account. So that's actually one of the bigger line item increases because our call volume's gone up, which means we owe them more money as a percentage. Although the percentage is the same that we pay them.
So we had a rate increase this year?
The rate increase, correct.
First, it's done every year now, or reviewed every year?
Reviewed every year, correct. So this basically level staffing the way we've been for the past year. Gives you that third ambulance 40 hours a week. So much like the police chief had spoken, any cuts to this, that third ambulance is now will be off the table. We just won't be able to staff it.
Again, scanner junkie, it's busy. So yeah. Busy. Questions from the committee? I'll be at Hang Tie by 8 o'clock.
Thank you very much.
One other question.
Oh, sure.
Equipment replacement. Yours tend to run forever, right? We have a ladder truck in the queue. It's been built.
It's
be here sometime in the next month or two. I know we have an ambulance in the queue.
Ambulance should be in, last I was told, sometime in August.
When did we order it?
January of 22, I think it was.
January of 22. Think about it. Think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. The ladder was actually ordered. That was January or February of 23. So 2 years, that's unheard of now. They're saying about 58 months is the lead time.
58 months and... $2.5 million. This one that is coming in is 1.9, if I remember correctly. The same thing now is 2.5, pushing 3.
Correct.
And that's in a year and a half, 2 years.
And it's only going to get worse with the...
It's a five-year wait.
Yeah. That's I think Chief told me 58 months.
15 months.
Yeah. Build time now for a ladder truck. Or for an engine. When I got on this committee, we would buy an engine for about $400,000, $4.5 million. Somebody local just bought one for $1.1 million.
Correct. Yep.
I'm sorry, a freaking fire truck. $1.1 million, and they're months and years out. Years out.
Yeah, everyone's buying stock apparatus. It's just quicker, and I think the manufacturers are trying to push it that way. Did you kind of take it the way that they're building it because it moves off the line? One other thing you talk about the exorbitant costs is. Now with the EPA standards are coming down for 2027, Cummins alone for the engine is predicting a $180,000 price increase. So for the next fire truck, you could have figured another $200,000 just because of the power plant with nothing else changing.
That's not due until 27, I think.
Yep. 27, 28 is what our plan was. So.
Okay, I've said my piece. Anybody, do we have any in the... Oh, go ahead. No, please.
So just a question. I appreciate the forward thinking, the planning with regards to getting the equipment that you need. But I am curious if, you know, just because I'm not seeing it anywhere, is there a way to kind of quantify the impact of the increased operating expense from having the additional truck? Just how are you... You know, do we know what that's going to cost on an ongoing basis? And I'm not saying that's not worth it, but just...
So the new truck that's coming in?
Yeah, so no. You know, you're going to have more stuff. So it's going to cost more on an annual basis to just maintain and continue to operate. From what I've seen historically, it's been relatively stable. You've managed to control it. But I'm curious, what the new truck is going to, you know, and anything else like that is going to, how that's going to impact your operating expenses?
Actually, very negligible, because the current tower that we have is going to remain as a spare, mostly because what they give you in a trade isn't worth it. It's just, it's crazy. You're better off keeping the apparatus.
Yeah.
So there'll obviously some maintenance costs to keep that on the road. The one nice thing is, by having that spare, is if the new one ever went out of service for maintenance or to break down, we now have a spare, which we've never had before. We can't count the 1949, but it's there. But I don't know if specific, Joe handles a lot of the maintenance. I don't know if there's anything specific that you've seen as we replaced apparatus.
Yeah, so obviously the new truck would be covered under warranty, so maintenance on that, very, very minimal. Yeah. The older truck that we're keeping as a spare, there's some routine maintenance that we'd have to pay on it. Actually comes out of the DPW budget now. So there's some, you know, just regular oil change, just stuff like that, and just very minimal as far as just keeping that as a spare in that regard. So
okay, so limited impact to operating expenses, which is great. Yeah.
And it's also because we've been able to take some of that grant money and apply it towards equipment as well. Because right, as we were talking about with that neighboring department paying the $1.1 million for the engine, that's also all the equipment. So you have to figure, you're probably talking about $100,000 to $150,000 worth of equipment. So we've been able to try to kind of cobble that together out of some of the grants.
Great. Out of curiosity, how long is the warranty on the new truck?
At least a year.
Yeah, they don't give you
a whole lot.
Yeah, they don't give you a 336 on those, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Just as an aside, there are, I think, well over 70 three-story buildings in this town. Think about it. I wouldn't want a Dean College student right, hanging out a window on the third floor and not have that truck.
Yep.
So when you start counting them, they're everywhere. Any other questions? Anybody?
One question here. Should the June override not pass, does the fire department have an idea what cuts they would have to make as a result?
We'll probably be looking at two personnel. We do have one unfilled spot right now that we're just kind of holding off to see what happens. So we would not fill that spot, obviously, and then we'd probably lose, obviously, one more. We'd have to see what the breakdown is.
Like the chief has stated previously, you know, unfortunately, if the override did not pass, that third ambulance that we're operating at least 40 hours a week, that would not be in play anymore. We wouldn't be able to staff that adequately for those 40 hours a week. So we'd be back down to just our two ambulances that are currently staffed.
Okay. And then that in turn creates more fees that we pay when other towns have to help us respond, right?
It's actually lost money.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they'll bill for it, we won't bill
exactly,
for it.
Exactly, right.
There's also a little bit more of a cascading effect, as you all know, based off the presentation that was provided to the town council. But you know, you end up with a longer response time from those other communities coming in. So obviously we're losing revenue that, you know, offsets a lot of things in our budget. But you're also that service demand, it gets tougher to fulfill.
And they're busy as well, all those mutual aid departments, so.
Does anybody know what the dollar value of, maybe Kerry, I'm looking at you, what the income from ambulance operations is in a typical year?
As of March, we
have. Whoops.
So March, we have received $1,800,000. $7. That's what we received in March. We only have 3 months left.
Seems lower than
yeah.
I thought.
So we are above. Well, remember, it's CARMSAR. So I'm sorry. Reconciliation may not be in. They're a little behind. So, you know, you probably got 4 or 5 months left for ambulance.
Yeah.
What we have here is based off a calendar year 2024, and the total collected we have is 2.3 million. So that's, you know, pretty high. So 2.332975.25.
And that's what we buy the new vehicles
nope.
out of?
No. Nope. No, that essentially it's general fund revenue. So it goes, the ambulance receipts go into local receipts. If people read the whole budget, you'll see the breakdown of the different categories: motor vehicle excise, meals, hotels, you know, investment incomes, you know, Medicare payments, all this stuff. And ultimately, to Joe's number, which will probably go up this year. Well, definitely will in 2025 calendar year. It pays for about a third to 40% of the cost of the fire department. So if you take the cost of the fire department in this budget, it's about 7.4 million, right? So they're bringing in about a third of the revenue to offset the cost of the fire department. So that's important because property taxes are only paying for about two-thirds of the entire fire department. And that's why over the years, I think it was the year before, we added, I think over the last two fiscal years, we added a couple of paramedics to get the third ambulance in rotation. And the way that we do that, unfortunately, because we don't want people to call EMS and be sick or need EMS, right? No offense, but we don't really want people to be hurt.
Exactly.
But because the call volume is going up so drastically, so people ask all the time, if more people move to Franklin, right? And we grow at a point of 40,000 people someday, which is going to be very hard to achieve. People say, well, what about public safety? Well, eventually when those people arrive, and they bring in, you know, revenue, and they're calling the police officer, they're calling the fire department, some of that revenue is captured through the ambulance receipts that helps pay for the staff that we hire.
Right.
So it's not all property tax impact for the fire department.
And my apologies on that number. You can actually add another $62,000. So the total is $2,395,379.45. We were just looking at a couple additional line items there to add up.
Do we have any idea what the third ambulance brought in or brings in?
So we don't have a exact prediction of the third ambulance as far as the revenue, but we can tell you they transported 77 times last year, and
that doesn't seem right.
So obviously that's a big impact. They had 119 responses. So that, you know, 77 total transports times, if you go to our website, you'll see that fee schedule. That's what's billable, but what actually is allowable based on what insurance they have, it varies. So what exactly we can collect based off the insurance that they have.
But what I'm confused about is it never appears on capital that I can remember. Where does it get a? If it doesn't, is it just come out of the general fund as an expense?
There's a certain amount that we budget. I think it's 125 or 150. I can't remember the exact amount that we pull out of ambulance receipts to stash away to do the ambulance replacements.
Okay, as long as it's something.
But I just want to make sure you know that. Excuse me. It's not like they come to the Capitol hearing, ask for an ambulance. Because local receipt, ambulance receipts to some degree has, you know, it's kind of like snow and ice. It has like a statutory authorization to it. So we're not coming in here. Like the police cruisers are completely different. The dump trucks and stuff for DPW, the fleet are completely different.
Yeah, the ambulances are the one.
I wish the dump trucks could bring in revenue, but they usually don't.
No.
You know, and I don't think many citizens would be thrilled if we started charging people for police car runs, right? So, you know,
you call us. It's 10 cents a
10 cents a ride. Well, that, you know, I hope we don't ever get to that point in society. But, you know.
Not to beat it to death. Do we have another one on order since they're years out?
No.
I know we don't. Well,
much like the tower, we're going to keep one of the current ones, so we'll actually have five in the fleet. Which goes back to obviously, you know, some additional maintenance costs, but that gives us a little bit greater bandwidth as far as if an apparatus actually goes down.
Right.
We're always trying to stay on top of it and keeping in contact with our vendors to make sure we're kind of pre-queued before we get to that point as far as ordering. So, you know, hopefully we'll be looking at that pretty soon as far as, you know, but it's always something we evaluate.
Okay, any more? I was going to say from the audience, they don't want to ask anything. No? Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman of the MEC, would you like to do the next one?
Third job, yes. Simple, Department 225 is the Regional Dispatch Center. You know, as we've basically come back on to a full assessment payment from the five-year grant cycle or four-year grant cycle, people will look on the sheet and say, well, why was it $610,000 back in 2023? For some of you that are new, the reason why was we were eligible for what was called a regional development grant through the state 911 department, and they paid 50% of our assessment that year. It went over a four-year time frame. We are now actively working with the state right now, with the 911 department and our friends at the Southeastern Regional Emergency Communication Center, which is called SEMREC, another acronym, which is basically Foxborough, Mansfield, Norton, and Easton. And we are now working together, and we'll probably be signing an IMA next month, intermunicipal agreement, which is required by the state to actually merge both of those regional dispatch districts. That would be a 10-town district, which would be the largest regional dispatch center in all of New England. I just, for context, just for people that may not know, the state of California has five, okay? So if you want to know how parochial we are and how territorial we are in New England, that's a good example. The state of California, which is 48 million people, has five PSAP centers. And in Massachusetts, we have, just in Massachusetts alone, we have over 200. So, you know, it is surreal. And so we have been working with our friends in Foxborough and those other communities for a few years to try to regionalize everything. For fire and police, for a majority of operational services, we already do mutual aid. We already work well together. Foxborough, we have an agreement with them where they do our maintenance of our vehicles there. Some of the other towns in the area do too. One, this will bring a significant amount of economies of scale, but more importantly, over, I'm going to say over maybe 15 years, maybe 10 or 15 years, I would expect that hopefully that center in Foxborough, which will be the home base, may actually be a PSAP for anywhere between a dozen to two dozen communities over the next 10 years. So we're looking at phasing in some other communities as well that have shown interest. Another reason for this merger is hiring dispatchers is incredibly difficult. Both SEMREC and the MEC are down several people. We are consistently down a couple people, if not a handful. The pay is not exactly the best. The stress levels are very high. The training requirements are very high as well. So for a job and career recruitment system, merging the districts will be advantageous for everybody too, because hopefully there'll be some career ladders built in. And you know, way beyond my life, I'm sure AI will run all of this. But as of right now, we still need human beings and we need real people in the consoles to be able to dispatch the calls out to our police and fire. So we've been working on this for a few years. This will also make us eligible for another hopeful five-year grant program. And if we can land that, our goal as a merged district would be to land that in FY28, fingers crossed. It's a big goal, but we're trying to get there for FY28. And then we would be, the cycle, I believe, as long as the program stays the same, the state would pay the assessment for all member 10 communities. They would pay 75%, 75%, 75%, 50%, and then 75% again, somewhere around those ranges, which would be huge savings in the budget over a five-year time frame. We probably would employ the same strategy we did last time. Some of you are familiar with it. I know they've been on the board for a while, where we kind of used some of the money that was in here in the savings to put into a stabilization account so that we could kind of, you know, when you go from a, you know, a $600,000 to $1.3 million assessment, that's a huge chunk of money to just make up 1, 2, 3 years. So we kind of phased in some of the one-time monies to get back here. So that's fresh on my mind. That's really the biggest news of the MEC. Everything else is pretty much steady as they go. The assessment here is $1.3 million this year, which is actually still lower than it was when we first started. So we are managing things pretty well over there. But the job market at the dispatch center is getting tough. People are just going to the next one, coming back. You know, it's just at some point we'd meet a much more stable force of folks. And I think Cemrec's experiencing the same thing in Foxborough. So we're trying to merge those centers. And like I said, right now, from an operational standpoint, especially fire, I should note, we're now all on the same software with fire. We got rid of the antiquated system that nobody liked. And so we are making a lot of capital improvements. And a lot of this money is being financed through the state 911 department through a series of grant programs that they've offered to try to incentivize regionalization among the town. So this is our sixth year. Next week will be the sixth anniversary of the MEC. And someday I'll write a book on it, because I don't know how I've gotten through these 6 years doing this, but it's been very fascinating, to say the least.
One question. If I had Chief McLaughlin, Chief Lynch, grilling them over there of the quality of the work of the MEC, issues? No? Yes? Chief?
No, I think they'd be balanced with
it. There's always, you know we've got five towns and there's probably five Washington streets, for instance.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, there's always going to be issues, but there's nothing that's over the top standout. The problem is like Jamie already said, that their turnover rate is pretty high, and so they're constantly trying to, you know, train new people, which takes away from the experienced people because they're in the middle field training them, and then the new people, it takes a while to, you know, to kind of get it. It's one of the, as I always said, that a dispatching job in public safety is probably one of the toughest jobs there is, other than, you know, first line supervisor and a dispatcher. They're in the same boat. It's very difficult. But no issues like that. I'm not fond of the RMS system we're working with, right. So I'm hoping that with the merger, they're getting a new one at CEMREC, and it will probably be the one that we will merge to. So that'll solve our problem.
Is that a record system?
Records management, a record management system. And the CAD, that's what it is called, Caliber. It's not very good. Yeah. But we're patient.
So we're, the turnover rate is high, and I think to the Chief's point, I think he would agree. I mean, one of the biggest values is retention, because the more familiarity you have with the technology, especially as it evolves rapidly, right? There's always a new product coming in that's better, faster, just like all of our personal lives, right? And to have also the geography of the communities is huge. And I respect the fact that a lot of folks use these positions to then go to the academy, become a paramedic, become a police officer. They're in training for the other job. But when you have that cycle every couple years, it's really hard. And so retention is really the biggest issue that's at all regional dispatch centers, by the way. But hopefully we'll make this happen, and we hope to go live in 2 years. There'll be a building project at CEMREC that needs to expand. But we've been having really positive conversations with the state about financing that. So we're very hopeful.
I'm good. Anybody?
If I could just make sure. So what it sounds like is typically, you know, generally when it's working for, you know, municipality, you're gonna argue that there's an efficiency. There's a quality of service opportunity there because you're just working with the local town. But the argument here is that by regionalizing it, we can actually achieve economies of scale, improve retention because we're, you know, through advancement opportunities, as well as reducing the number of people we actually need to staff these roles. And to implement it, it's just going, you know, there's an implementation process that's going to take a couple of years to be up and running, but, you know, it's essentially making a plan today for what should help us look better in the future.
Absolutely. And I would add technology into that. I mean, the facilities, I think, that chiefs probably used 20 years ago, 10 years ago versus today versus where we're going to be in 5 or 10 is much, to your point, that you add in not only the technological advancement, which adds in much more precise response, you know, but you're also economies of scale. You're not buying two systems at one dispatch and another. So you're, from a capital perspective, you're just buying one and spreading that bandwidth across a greater amount of communities. And then also, to add to that, you know, adding in additional communities down the line continues to set those same trends that you just mentioned. So,
right. So it's kind of a cost savings through expansion.
Yeah, it's a rare example of regionalization that I think is generally doing well. I think the biggest barrier, as I've learned, is just the thing about California. You know, you got 5 PSAP centers for 50 million people. So what the heck is going on here that makes that happen? And it's just local control. It's just as simple as that. And I've said on the record, and I'll say it again right now, you know, at times, and I know I speak for the chiefs on this, having that local control here, walking right out to the dispatch unit in the police station or the fire station is advantageous, right? Like, because you know the person, you know where they're going, that person may live local. So there was a lot to that that was valuable as well, no question about it. But all those people we dealt with for years and decades here locally are going to retire someday anyways. And, you know, and so eventually you still need to know the local geography. I think that's where technology is going, where with GIS in particular, and everything, the precision of where the calls are is going to improve over time. The issue now is really the people behind the consoles of just getting that, really that muscle memory going and trying to generate that. So, but you nailed it. Those are really the efficiencies that are there. Yep.
One citizen.
Yes, Steve Sherlock again, Community Information Director. You've heard it before. The one other plug I would add to reinforce a couple of points that were mentioned. Gary Primo, when I did set, I think in February, I did take a tour. If you haven't had a tour of the facility, it is fascinating. The mutual aid, certainly, is one of the other technical advantages. Having known and seen and respectfully the individualization, now in that center, they know where everybody is and who's available when a call comes in.
Right.
They don't have to go looking and starting to make the calls. It's instantaneously known. Now, it'll still take time for that transport to happen, but with the technology there, it's fascinating. So I would encourage a visit. Certainly listen if you can Google Gary Primo on franklin.news. And audio. Mm-hmm. He spends 15-20 minutes, talks through it. Wonderful experience. Certainly encourage that.
Yeah.
One last question.
You may.
Confirming, so the MAC stabilization, I'm glad you mentioned that. Is that zeroed out for now?
It is not.
Okay, so that'll just sit there until potentially changes or if it's needed?
Yep. Yep. There's about 450,000, I think, left in it. Is that right? Yeah, Karen? Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 500,000 roughly.
Okay, now that we've not been arrested, so no fires, I believe Animal Inspection Department is next.
There he is. Hey, Gus.
I choose not to be inspected, thank you.
That's okay.
Do the same thing, my man. What are you going to do? What don't you have that you need, et cetera?
Good evening.
You learned 2 pretty good ones. 3
good evening, Chair Connolly and the rest of the committee. We have everything we need. We do a fantastic job with the limited resources that we have as far as personnel. We keep plugging away every day because it's such a great town to work for. Seriously, I mean, it's not blowing smoke. It's. I go to other towns and I see how it's run and how a lot of people are unhappy with their jobs. They answer the phone and it sounds like their cat just died. And I'm not trying to be funny. It's a serious thing. We have it so good here, and we truly all believe that it's the best town to work for in the Commonwealth. So I have everything I need. And we stay level with what we had last year, and we're happy about it. So
the inspections of weights and measures.
Yes.
Is that settled now?
Very well, thank you. And the state is doing, the county is doing a fantastic job. And the gentleman that does it, William Mullen, for us, is as articulate and serious about it as you can get when it comes to enforcement.
I'll ask, how many inspections does your department do in a year? We know how many ambulance runs and how many police calls. How many inspections?
10 a day per inspector, which is building, plumbing, gas as well, and electrical. So basically 30 inspections a day on a busy day. Slower days, depending on the weather, but we've never missed a beat with the amount of people that pull permits. So.
And you've kept my cousin, Richie Canetta, employed for a long time.
He's still plugging away and does a great job. And
86, maybe? Yeah, 87, 8?
I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. This could come back. This could come back to bite me. But the knowledge he has is amazing. Yeah. You would just be amazed, especially with the commercial. He just can, sorry to say it, he can smell a bad job a mile away.
When he's the gas inspector.
Yes. Yep. Bernie's no slouch either. Bernie's just as good. And the two Bernies that we have are fantastic inspectors. And the one we hired a little over a year ago for a local inspector for building is what came from Needham and was a builder before that and just does a great job. No drama.
No drama. I like that.
No drama at all.
Questions from the troops? Oh, 8 o'clock is still in range.
Just a quick comment. You know, as I look through the item line 240, most of your costs are salary. You don't have a lot of expenses.
We do not.
Really is just
paper and pencils and.
So I'm not missing anything there.
Yeah. The occasional book here and there for code enforcement, but not a lot. We actually were donated. All the code just changed. It went from the 2015 ICC code to the 2021, and we had all our new code books donated to us. So that saved $1,000.
Karen was just, we just wanted to point out that I think to Steve's question earlier, which I'm grateful for, there's another one of those postings that goes up online, and I agree with him and others. I've been getting a ton of screenshots of angry people that were hiring new people, and I've been getting questions about all of the jobs that are posted online. There are no new positions. These are replacing people who have moved or retired. In the case of Gus, just so we're on the record, his admin, who was amazing, just left because her family moved out to the western part of the state. And we'll go through it on Thursday, but we are filling that position. But just because I know many of you may remember, we actually had more administrative assistants downstairs. And over the years, both Daniele and Tyler have basically doing all of the work for five departments, maybe a handful of boards and committees where we used to have 4 staff down there. So over time, with viewpoint permitting, not only bringing in more revenue through the online permitting system, but we've also been able to reduce costs. So when I hear that, and that's why Karen was waving in the back, you know, there is a vacant position. We should fill that actually pretty soon. We've already done interviews, but people do kind of seem to think we're hiring new people, and we're not. We're just filling the same positions that have been in the budget for years.
Most people would think that don't come to these meetings.
Well, in 60 seconds, we just answered some stuff that's been going around that people are getting angry about and don't really actually need to be angry at all.
It's not that you're not hiring new people. You're hiring new people, you're just not filling more positions.
Well, we're just not hiring. We're not adding.
We're not creating new positions.
But right. We just had downstairs, I think where Karen was going with this is, our director of community planning and development is retiring. Our conservation agent will be going on maternity leave, and then Danielle moved with her family out to the western part of the state. So when people see those two jobs that were online, they think we're adding new positions, and we're not. We're just filling the old positions. So for those of you on Facebook, now that you know the truth, feel free to chime in and correct the people that are angry about the fact that we're hiring a lot of new positions that were actually not, is not true at all.
I write an answer.
I wasn't and naming I, you specifically.
Well, no,
Mr.
I
Chairman.
Do. I write it, I
delete it,
save it, and then I delete. After I read it the next day, I delete it, and that's a good practice because then you don't say something really stupid.
Or maybe it was accurate.
Well, it may have been accurate, but wouldn't have solved anything. That's my point.
Mr. Chairman, also, we had two members that. Staff members that resigned, and another one left and went to facilities. So a total of two staff went to different avenues, and we had no help for a year and didn't pay those two salaries for the better part of a year. And the same thing with Danielle. She left maybe a month ago or two, and we're not paying her because she's gone. So it's a savings for the town.
As long as it doesn't.
And trivia question, where does that money go?
It's free cash.
Free cash.
There we go.
But you also
free
don't want to.
Really
helps pay for the police cruisers.
You don't want to be short staffed.
Right.
That causes service to go down. That's the worst thing that could happen.
It is. It's tough, but we can do it, and we'll get someone in quick, and we'll be fine. So.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
That was easy.
Thank you.
Let's see. Last night I missed two entire budgets. I don't want to do
animal
it.
Control.
Animal control.
So the animal control officer is not here. Hopefully she's out attending to animal issues. No. This is just for the record for people that may tune into this later. This is a regional agreement that we have with the town of Bellingham. Sorry. We supply the parcel of the kennels. Down by the DPW, and the town of Bellingham manages and administers the whole program. So we get a bill every year. This year it's $104,700. Over the course of time, this has definitely saved probably a lot of money for both communities. Well-oiled machine, and as I say every year, it's another year that goes by, and I'm not jinxing it because I've already said it nine other years, but Tracy's the best I've ever met at this. I still am waiting, you know, I've never gotten a complaint from anybody in town. The animal control didn't show up. She's fantastic at what she does. Her and Patrick do a great job. So that's really it. And it's pretty straight up. Send us the bill and that's it.
We're not going to the dogs, is anybody? Sorry, couldn't miss it. All right. Next to the last of the evening, Public Works. Where is he? There he is.
The whole posse is here.
I was going to say.
The whole team.
Here they come. There's only two seats tonight, so.
Good evening, Sharon. It's been a while since I've seen you. I was telling the boss that the monthly meetings we had for a while. Get to see you all the time. Yeah. So this is nice, catching up.
Oh man. You have brown eyes? Never mind.
Yeah.
Same drill, if you would.
So
what's happening? Where are we going?
So I wanted, I thought about this a lot, and you know, obviously we're similar to all the other budgets you've heard already, okay? And the one thing I've always said about Public Works is our budget, unlike almost all the other budgets, is our personnel costs only 35%, but our expenses are 65%, okay? And I want to go back, not this year's fiscal budget, go back to FY24, and this is just the general fund, not the water, sewer, stormwater, solid waste, recycling, enterprise funds, but just the general fund. Our budget at the time was just over $6 million, okay? In 25, our budget actually decreased by 4.5%. We had to make up revenue for the overall budget to assist the schools particularly. Okay, so our budget actually this year is down 4.5% from the year before, okay? Additionally, as we brought up a couple times, we did transfer money over from the fire department. You know, if people crunch the numbers, there's $160,000 from the maintenance that basically playing to Foxborough to take care of their equipment, which is now under my budget. But it did, so my budget this year is basically $5.7 million, okay? The proposed budget for next year, and I'm still dealing with, you know, COLAs, contractual obligations for employees, but I think everybody knows over the last 2 years there's been this thing called inflation that's gone up tremendously that really affects my overall expenses. So my budget this year is basically $6 million. So I have the same, everybody can say they have the same service budget. I've gone down. My budget is truly the same budget it was 2 years ago. The same amount of money, because it's been reduced, okay?
You're not filling potholes?
No, we're filling potholes.
State money.
Yeah. State. And you know, there's a couple of things I think you know, the efficiencies that we try to work on, that's always ongoing. But you know, the question always comes up, and I'll try to answer it, is the fact that if, say, the override doesn't go through, okay, well, some of the stuff that, even if the override doesn't go through, is already happening. We, you know, 2 years ago, we had in our expensive budget over $600,000 for road repairs, okay? We're down to going to be $175,000 this year, okay? And these are things, you know, the police and fire, and I know some other departments might be losing personnel on July 1st if the override doesn't go through. The things that's hurting the public works is you're not going to see it on July 1st. You're going to see a little farther down the road. You follow me? It's already happening. You know, when everybody talks about roads, we can't do all the maintenance that we want to, the preventive maintenance, you know, the crack sealing, the chip sealing that makes our roads last longer, the big buck items, okay? So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to highlight was, and I owe this all these great spreadsheets to Kathy Moore. She's like, when I hired her, was it like 14 years ago? She was like, seems I like spreadsheets. But, you know, she's like, I like Excel. I'm like, really? She goes, no, I really do. She loves Excel. It's a great tool for our department because we have to crunch a lot of numbers.
Google Sheets.
Yeah, now Google Sheets, yeah. Right, Kate? Google? Yeah. We're trying. In our Central Motors division, back in FY14, basically was $650,000. Okay.
Central Motors is.
Central Motors takes care of all the vehicles in town, not just public works vehicles. It takes care of all the registered vehicles. I think Jay says we have like 240 something registered vehicles, but that doesn't count all the handheld tools we have, the generators, the compactors, everything else you can possibly imagine. Okay. But in 2014, it was $605,000. This year, I'm requesting $745,000. It's gone up $100,000, basically, a little over that. And most of that goes basically to, we had to add for fuel back in 2023 of $70,000, and another increase in fuel. So basically, the budget over 10 years is basically the same in Central Motors, and we have more vehicles. And there's a reason to look behind that. One of the biggest reasons, I will say, is the town has done a very good job of replacing equipment. And we're not driving around junk. So it does need less repairs because we have newer equipment. So it doesn't have to go out as much. Additionally, through the years, we did hire another mechanic, you know, position. And that assists so we can do stuff in-house. I think everybody knows it's cheaper to work on your stuff at home than send it out to a mechanic, to a shop. And we have some very talented guys down there. And additionally, bringing on a couple years ago is basically a fleet manager, and he's done a tremendous job of running numbers, getting good prices, dealing with other communities, you know, so we can share things. So, But that's what I wanted to highlight with my budget. My budget's, I can tell you the way we do it, we've worked together for a long time. I basically use for all my expenses 5-year running averages. So we know what's going on. We've made some adjustments here and there. But basically, I mean, my budget's the same as it was 2 years ago. And I still have to deal with, you know, COLA raises and personnel. It's, what, $1 million? My salary expenses almost $2 million. So on top of that, but we've that's where we kept it at.
Is there anything we're not doing that we should be?
That we're not doing?
Yeah. That's an off the wall question. I agree.
It's a tough question.
Something we're not doing easily to the roads that would add 2 years to it or something. Because I know I just saw a bid go out for Hot in Place, which was correct. New technology, as I remember.
We were the first in the state to do it. Yeah, that was Washington Street, and it's held up tremendously. And that's a very high traffic road, as you know. We get a lot of people coming in and out of basically Woonsocket down there, but it's high traffic road.
That's north. Bellingham is really north Woonsocket.
That's true. But they go through a small section of Bellingham to come into Franklin. Yeah. There's a lot of Rhode Island plates on that road. But anyways, that road is held up very well. We had to actually deal with the first time the Hot in Place people came in town. We actually have Aggregate Industries came out because they weren't necessarily fair about it, and we have to top coat it. And it's worked out tremendously. You drive that road, and that road's 14 years old now, and it's really doing well. So it's the little stuff that we have to do. It's like not always the popular stuff, the crack sealing. That's the squiggly lines. You know, we're filling all that so we don't get the potholes. The chip seal, you know, we do a ton of chip seal in town, especially in our subdivisions. You know, we coat it and rough it up. It's the preventive maintenance that we've done very well in this town, you know, over the last 20 years. And that's the thing. Like I said, if we don't keep up with that, it's going to come back to us when, you know, 5-6 years down the road, when the roads start failing. Because then it costs a lot more money to repair it. You've heard it from everybody about preventive maintenance. And I know all the departments have. We have what we call asset management plans. It doesn't matter. We have an asset management plan for the roads. You've seen our roads rating. You know, Doug Martin, the water superintendent's done a great job asset management on all our well stations, our pumps. You know, so we know it's coming. It's just when it's going to get funded. If you don't take care of your furnace, you know, maybe it's going to last 10 years, or you can make that thing last 80 years, and it's cheaper.
Just also mention really quickly, Brutus and the staff gave, I think Doug, Mike, Derek, Kate, I think everybody was at a meeting at the council 6-7 months ago, and when you're looking at what's next, they presented a 40-slide presentation on what's next for roads, snow and ice, water, sewer. I think the water tank master plan is probably a big one. I know stormwater is, and there's a bunch of other stuff with federal mandates, PFAS, my favorite topic. But now people are realizing why it's not like I'm a fan of chemicals. It's expensive to do. And the cost to do it is enormous on taxpayers, ratepayers. But if people are looking at a perspective of like what the next 5-10 years is for almost every division, highway and ground, park and tree trimming, you can go look at that. It's on Bruce's website. Actually, the DPW, I think, has like maybe 4 or 5 presentations about the status of like where operations are at maybe over the last 15 years. And you can actually look at the last 10 or 15 years worth of stuff of like where we've been going, what we've accomplished, and what's left to do. I'm not going to throw out the staggering number of how much money of infrastructure improvements are needed because it's shock. Even us, we're shocked by it, but I think it gives a good idea into what's coming. But I can certainly say that we've presented on the, I think the question of what's next is also frightening because if you look at the presentation the superintendent I did on March 5th, which is also online, you know, we're looking at $400,000 to $500,000 worth of cuts to the DPW. So, if June 3rd doesn't come out in the right way. So I think what's next, if the override doesn't pass, we're going back to what's lost. And I think that's something hopefully people can convey to the public, because what's next is not going to happen until we figure out what today is and how we're going to be able to fund the basic stuff. Tree trimming, sidewalk painting, crosswalk painting, pedestrian friendliness, ADA access to sidewalks, maintenance of sidewalks, roads, and on and on and on, you know, trail maintenance, farm maintenance, fields, all the school fields, snow and ice removal. You know, it's, I'm getting overwhelmed just saying it all. It's a lot. And to think that, you know, we're not going to have a conversation about what's next. We are who we are, and that's what it's going to be.
Just as an aside, that presentation you gave 6-7 months ago,
yeah,
I shared with the chairman of the Finance Committee in Milton. They were struggling. I don't think they had a DPW, and they were putting it, I don't know exactly what was going on, but he complimented it. He said, wow, that was his comment.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I've shared numerous things that particularly DPW had done with them.
Just
interesting going back and forth.
Sorry, George. Just to follow up on your comment, Jamie, one thing that I have heard multiple times recently that I was hoping you could touch on was, you know, with regards to the potential override is, you know, why is there not just a clean school override? Why do the other departments need it? I'm hearing from every department that comes up, you know, and speaks to us about the challenges that they're seeing. Can you kind of help us understand, like, why is this broader than the schools?
Well, it's a good question. I think one thing is, you know, the schools, as I've said many times all year, I mean, they did an unbelievable job this year, you know, with the redistricting over, really, you know, they've been working on it for years, but to get it done, you know, really shows, I think, the public with the 3.1, 3.5 million savings that are in their budget. I think through collective bargaining, maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we reformed the whole police department with their 4x4 schedule. So we did a whole schedule change, which is a big deal. We did the same thing in DPW 2 contracts ago. Snow and Ice was actually through this committee, Natalie and Sue Dusnap had suggested, you know, why is that not a baked cost? Why are we one-offing this every year? We found creative ways to do that. The fire department, I know we did a whole complete restructuring. And I think part of it is now, certainly we can continue to make reforms. The senior center, I know they're not here tonight, they'll be here on Thursday, but I think people are generally aware of a lot of the changes and reforms we've done down there to bring in more revenue, to capture revenue accurately, to make sure we're offsetting the costs. A lot of accounting things, that's why our audits are good. I think every department has kind of gone through it, right? We've pulled just about every rabbit out of a hat we can to be creative. I think to Chief Lynch's point earlier, I think our employees too, not just in PD, but everywhere, they're very aware of what's going on. But I think we're also down to the point where we're talking about cutting facilities, $400,000. That's a lot of schools. We're talking about cutting roads. Could be $300,000 or $400,000 in road work. And I think the other piece is to that is, you know, fixed costs are across the board. I think we're now in like 4 fiscal years of inflation. And it's impacted everything from school transportation last night to special education to labor costs for schools and all of us. I think the DPW and facilities department have probably been hit hardest as almost anyone, if not harder, for exactly the reasons that Brutus brought up. Yeah, the budget may be the same, and yeah, that was okay, but we're losing actual capacity to do work in town. And I'm hoping that, to kind of conclude, I'm hoping that the Finance Committee, the Joint Budget Subcommittee, the Council, the School Committee, all of us, the staff, I think to your question, Ken, I think, you know, has seen, okay, it's not just one department or one part of the budget. The schools are 70% of the entire budget, so they're obviously the biggest enchilada. In there, but I think it's affecting every single piece. If you're the senior center, you're seeing food costs go through the roof. We have not raised fees yet. You know, that may come at some point, and we may have to bring them up and down based on supply chain issues, but I think food costs are a huge cost. Salt, you know, everything we do for DPW, facilities, parts, cleaning supplies. I mean, you know, when you think about running your home, right, and what you have to go into your house, I mean, it's really not much different than we do. You have to plow your driveway, you have to clean your house, you have to pay for water, you have to pay for sewer. Those rates are going up, stormwater rates go up. I mean, all this stuff is going up. And I think where the nexus is us at home as people too, and all of our residents are also seeing that in their own households as well. And I think it's been a tough 3 or 4 years. I would love to have believed 4 years ago when inflation really took off at that 10 or 11%, I think we all sat around here at meetings too and thought, well, you know, in a couple of years it'll come down, right? But, you know, inflation may have cooled off, but the prices of goods and services are not coming down. In fact, I would argue, especially services, contractors, vendors, those are still going way up for various reasons. So I think, you know, why is this relative to everybody? Well, I think, you know, everybody, including the school department, has done their part to try to reform everything and do everything they can. And the reality is that the shared pain has to now be really spread across, I think, each area to make sure the public is aware of what these dynamics are. And as you well know, because you watch this stuff and maybe many other people on the committee, just pick up a local newspaper. Milton's got a $9.5 million override today. You know, Stoneham was at a $14.6 million override. The town of Easton's looking at a $7.3 million override. You know, Natick was at a $7 million override, a little bit more. I mean, you've got, you know, these questions. Linfield's at $5 million. And also, you look at a town like Brookline that's looking at an $8 million deficit after just laying off $5 to $10 million worth of employees in the schools. The people that are concerned here about certain things for the town, whether it's the school district or the town, I often tell residents and parents, these are the same concerns and same things that are happening in Wellesley. Wellesley's cutting AP programs. Wellesley. I mean, how... seems like an oxymoron, right? Like, how could Wellesley cut AP school programs?
That's because
they don't have the money to do it. And I think, to your question, you know, all of these cost drivers with personnel, labor, healthcare, pensions, inflation, goods and services are just affecting everybody. And so I think the Joint Budget Subcommittee this year, you know, tried to really try to make it a little bit more equitable than last year.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Can I ask just a general question about procurement for the town?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
Is there centralized procurement, or is every department in charge of their own procurement? I'm only saying that because you touched on spending, and then my mind goes to tariffs and who's negotiating. You know, and I know our spend probably doesn't have a lot of tariff. You know, we're not buying a lot of, you know, maybe stuff from China. I don't know, but
no, I mean, I think most goods are, a lot of goods are from China.
Know.
We do have a centralized procurement office. Pam is our procurement official. She'll be here. Her department is up on Thursday. I know that because she's on the second floor with the finance team, she's been working very closely with the school business office, even on schools, even on food purchasing through the food services manager, through Collins staff. Where we can buy things through 30B or state bid lists, or avoid procurement for various exemptions, we do those things. We take advantage, I think the chiefs do quite often, with the state bid lists. You know, I don't want to go into a procurement lesson, but it is generally centralized. The exceptions I would say are, you know, I used to have a procurement license. I think Brutus used to have one. I know Mike Maglio keeps up his, Doug keeps his up, Derek, Kathy probably does at some point, Carlos did. I mean, all of us, at some point, either had our license, it's active, or facilities also, by the way, both Mike and Kevin are licensed. It's called MCPPO, Mass Certified Public Procurement Officials, I think. And so some of them are decentralized, like the town engineer does their own procurements because it's generally around road work. Pam will still put the bids out. She'll still organize the central register. We have one centralized account. But sometimes there are some specialties in which there are exemptions where they just do the purchasing on their own within that department. And we're under law, we're supposed to use, and we get usually multiple quotes, even when we're not legally obligated to put out a public procurement for 14 days. Oftentimes we can look around for the best price, and our procurement CPO, our Chief Procurement Officer Pam, works with all the departments across the board, including the schools, to do all that. So it is one centralized office. And to whoever said it earlier, or maybe it was Gus, there are very few towns that have centralized procurement. So it is another efficiency we have, where it's not like the schools have theirs and they have theirs. We have one person that puts it all out.
If you want to see how many bids she puts out, sign up for the, there's an email that comes out every time she puts out a bid. Okay. Somewhere on the new website, I found it. I checked them all. And every day there's a bid from her for just hot. That's where Brutus went out for hot in place recently. Yeah. That's there. There's a ton of stuff there. Okay.
Yeah. That's a great question.
Anybody else?
Do you want to handle the enterprise accounts too? I would assume.
Yes.
I'm not sure there's a lot to handle. But.
It's really, I mean, if you got specific questions, they're pretty much the same MO. I mean, does everybody know what the enterprise funds are? Not to be confused.
We have one new member. No.
I want to mind a little background on
that. Do you want, or?
Or you could have them do it. You know.
No, but actually, besides just what the actual enterprise fund is.
The enterprise fund chief,
It's not a tax. It's paid by the ratepayer, people that use it. So in layman's terms, any money that we collect in the water can only be used for water.
What enterprise funds do we have?
We have the water fund, we have the sewer fund, we have the solid waste, and we have the stormwater utility. So if we collect money through the stormwater utility, can only be used for stormwater drainage work. We can't use it for ball fields by law. And that's audited every year. So that's basically an enterprise fund.
Sorry, great, thank you.
So they're basically the same things. No. I mean, I have the same issues there.
Any highlights?
I can give you updates. Maybe Doug wants to talk about our big projects.
Beaver
going
Street?
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a question. Brutus, I have a question.
Sure.
They're pushing our $35 million sewer pipe. Mm-hmm. They're pushing it underground so they don't dig up the road. Is that correct?
Midwest Mall, that's part of it. Doug, you want to? We finally got under 140.
Yeah. Doug Martin, Town of Franklin Water and Sewer Superintendent. So George is correct. There's five, we call them jack and bore locations, where they excavate a jacking pit and a receiving pit, and they push the pipe, a carrier pipe, underground. And then they'll excavate all that material that's in that carrier pipe out, and then we'll put the real pipe, the pipe that's going to carry the sewage through that carrier pipe.
So
we do that at locations like all the train track locations where we're crossing. That's where we do it. That's pretty much the only way that we can cross the railroad, that they'll allow us to do it. But we also did it going from Pond at Old West Central over to Franklin Village Plaza, Village Mall. We just finished that. We actually had to switch up how we were doing that. So initially it was jack and bore, but because of the soil conditions, they had to actually do micro tunneling. So literally someone went into the pipe and excavated out with a hand shovel. But they got through.
Claustrophobia.
Yeah.
So, it took a little longer, too.
Yeah. Just staying on sewer side of things, I think you can see in our budget really no increase at all. I think it was 0.03 or something like that percent. Really even steady flow, expenses there, doing all right. Electricity is obviously our biggest number for sewer. We have 23 lift stations. So obviously we've got to pay for all that electricity to move that sewage. And just keeping up on maintenance, that's the biggest thing. Bruce, we talk about it all the time. We try to do the preventative maintenance things so that way we're not doing the bigger project, big number of things. And obviously we've been able to do it for 110 years for Beaver Street. Hopefully we can do it for another 110 years with this new project.
Now there's an accounting question. Your salary is paid out of the water sewer?
Yep, I'm 50% water, 50% sewer.
So that gets, in effect, the town charges the The money is sitting in water sewer. Has to get transferred to the town because you get paid by the DPW.
No, I actually get paid out of the enterprise account.
What about people that do both?
Kathy's probably best to. So in the budget narrative document, deep in, we have a title called split. And so we denote that, and there's different ratios for different people. We're obligated by law to do that. If you have a specific question on the position, I bet you Kathy could probably answer.
She's got a spreadsheet for that.
Close to the ratio of, like Kate, for example, in GIS comes definitely from almost, a portion of her salary comes from
everyone,
account.
Yeah.
Because GIS affects every single part of the DPW operations.
Correct.
Doug's a little different because almost all of his work, if not all of it, is exclusively from water and sewer. So he's a bad example to use.
I'm a bad. And we have, like, obviously, right? We have crews that are just water, crews that are just sewer.
Except when they plow.
Except
when they plow, but that's out of snow and
they
ice.
They get paid out of snow and ice.
So, but there's a lot of money
Where you
around.
See it more is, obviously, our administration support, Brutus, Kate, engineering. That's where we get the...
For example, like an administrative assistant in DPW is paid out of the general fund money. They're paid out of part water, part sewer, part solid waste, part stormwater, because they touch every department. They'll get a phone call. They could help anyone. They do water utility billing. So they're split between every department and every payroll. A piece of their pay goes to that budget account. So there'll be five budget accounts attached to an administrative assistant. There's two attached to Doug. So when he gets paid, it splits off into the right charge code. Everyone in DPW has multiple accounts because we all work in every.
As an old banker, there's a lot of general ledger debits and credits flying around.
Yes, a lot of them. Right, Linda?
In my terms.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, for example, just to tell you, like, the clerks that were brought, the folks that would take care of you when you walk into the public works. So 20% of their salary is paid by the general fund. 10% paid by the stormwater utility, 30% is paid by the water utility, 30% by the sewer, and then 10% by the solid waste fund. So it makes up, that's 100% of the pay. And with, you know, whatever the rate is, then it's divided, how long they've been here and stuff like that.
It was just a question that I think people ought to know. That's all, that the you know, there's money paid to water, but it's not, you know, it can get confusing.
If they read the budget, if you read the budget, I'm serious, if you read the budget narrative, it doesn't, if we put in Kathy's spreadsheets of every single person, the thing would go on even longer than people are already annoyed that it goes on. But we do highlight in there, to Doug's point earlier, all the positions and which ones are exclusively in water, sewer, general fund, et cetera, and which ones are split between different accounts.
That was my only... question. Anybody else? You have anything? Do you have? I asked Brutus. Do you have anything you need? Want? Which is not this year. It's probably not this year that we show it.
But yeah. But good plugs.
Yeah. For I mean, on the water side, like Jamie said, we have a ton of unfunded mandates. PFAS being the biggest one. I think he hit the nail on the head when he said. It's not that we don't like chemicals, right? But what I don't like about it is that now it's taking away money from other infrastructure projects that we desperately need to do. We need to continue water main replacement. We need to replace the Hillside tanks, which, by the way, the oldest one was built in 1888, and it's the second oldest riveted steel tank still in service. The steel is phenomenal. It's the foundation that scares me. So those are the things that you know, those unfunded mandates take away from,
right?
Which is unfortunate. But just from an operation budgets side of things, you know, we're seeing electricity go up on the water side. Chemicals, that was $100,000 just last budget cycle. That you, if you see the changes from year to year, that went up, and that's all due to inflation. So, and that it's not like when things go up, they don't go back down.
It's inflation or greedflation.
Or whatever.
Well, that's another discussion for another place, I suppose. All right. Anybody else? Questions? Okay. I think for this evening, unless I missed a budget, there's nothing on the back, so I'm good. Committee comments, anybody? Things that you didn't hear that you want to hear? That kind of stuff? Anybody out there that would like us to look at anything? We'd like to start this year renewing, perhaps in Natalie's format, the Bill Dowd deep dive stuff, so be prepared. We'll be coming to looking for you.
My format is not scary. It was just meant to, people are going to be like, what does that mean? I just thought it would be great to give you guidance because it's very much like, hey, come present to us. And that's hard too, right? Like you have jobs and all of that. So it was to give guidance of like, hey, here are five things that we're looking for. Here's a format to make it easier so that you can pull it together easier and we get the information that we want. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
Adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? I'm 25 minutes late anytime.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.